So a major hedge fund, TCI, just liquidated an $8 billion position in Microsoft. Let that sink in for a second.
Yeah, it's a staggering amount of money.
$8 billion,
Yeah.
just completely off the table. And, you know, they didn't do it because of a bad quarterly earnings report or like
Yeah.
a leadership scandal.
Right, or some kind of weird macroeconomic shift.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They dumped it because they actually believe the traditional software moat is just fundamentally dead. I mean, the very foundation that made Microsoft the most valuable company on Earth.
It's a stunning vote of no confidence in the old paradigm. I mean, when you see institutional capital move with that kind of violence, it tells you that the tectonic plates beneath the entire technology sector have definitively shifted. They're looking at the exact same landscape we're examining today, and they've concluded that, well, selling software as a fixed utility is just no longer a viable long-term business model.
And that is exactly why we are doing this deep dive for you today. If you are building, operating, or leading in the tech space right now, you are probably feeling that ground shift beneath your feet.
Oh, absolutely. The noise out there is
It
deafening.
really is.
Yeah.
But our mission today is to cut through that static. We are going to surface exactly what is moving on the ground, how it works under the hood, and what it means for your business.
Right.
We've pored over all the latest dispatches, the market moves, the structural frameworks, and we've distilled it down to the big three developments that are setting the agenda for operators this week.
And I think it's important to note that these three developments are deeply interconnected. We're looking at a complete redesign of how work is executed,
Wait.
a massive bottleneck in the physical resources required to power that work, and then a profound crisis in how we actually govern the companies attempting to build it all.
Okay, let's unpack this. First, we're looking at the definitive fracturing of the AI agent landscape. Like, we are finally moving past the buzzwords here.
Finally.
The ecosystem has quietly split into three highly actionable tiers, and this fundamentally changes how you deploy these tools inside your organization.
Yeah, that's a huge shift.
Second, we are breaking down the impending Cerebras IPO. This is aggressively testing the ceiling of what the market is calling peak AI infrastructure optimism. And it really reveals the terrifying compute bottleneck everyone is about to hit.
Terrifying is the right word for it,
It
honestly.
is. And third, we're looking at Eric Ries's brand new framework for why successful companies are structurally doomed by a force he calls financial gravity. And how an incredibly simple, like, two-page legal document is quietly protecting the biggest players in the AI space.
Well, let's start at the application layer because that is where the $8 billion Microsoft dump actually begins to make sense.
Yeah, let's do it.
For the last 2 years, the term AI agent has been essentially meaningless. I mean, it was slapped on everything from a glorified spell checker to a basic chatbot.
Totally, just a marketing buzzword.
Right. But according to the latest analysis from Mindstream, that ambiguity is over. The landscape has crystallized into three very specific tiers of utility. And honestly, understanding the difference between them is the key to knowing whether your software company is obsolete.
Everyone has been telling you to use agents, but nobody's explaining how they actually function or which tier solves which problem.
Exactly.
Let's dismantle this new stratification. Tier one is categorized as personal assistants. So at the accessible end of the spectrum, you have tools like Manus and Claude Cowork. But we need to explain what makes these different from just, typing a prompt into ChatGPT.
Yeah, the defining characteristic of a tier one agent is multi-model orchestration.
Okay, what does that mean in practice?
Let's look at Manus. When you give Manus a complex goal, say, research the top 10 competitors in the European electric bike market, compare their pricing, and generate a visual matrix of their market share.
Right, a pretty standard analyst task.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, it doesn't just generate text based on its training data like a standard chatbot. It actually spins up a planning module. That module breaks your request down into subtasks. It acts as a router.
So it's essentially acting like a project manager, just dispatching tasks to different specialists.
Precisely. It sends a web scraping model out to find the live pricing. Then it sends a data analysis model to structure that pricing into a table.
Wow.
And then it sends a vision generation model to create the matrix graphic. And then, and this is the crucial part, a final synthesis model reviews all of those separate outputs, checks them against your original prompt, and packages them into a single cohesive deliverable.
That's incredible. It's doing the legwork of a human analyst by stringing together different specialized AI models in real time.
Exactly. And then you have Claude Cowork occupying that same tier one space, but its mechanism is entirely different. Cowork isn't just operating in the cloud. It touches the actual local file system on your machine.
Wait, really? Like directly on your hard drive?
Yes. You point it at a folder on your desktop, and it has the permissions to open your spreadsheets, read your PDFs, and execute tasks based on that highly localized context.
Oh, wow. I mean, which introduces massive utility, sure,
yeah,
but also significant security and compliance questions for enterprise architecture.
Oh, absolutely. A cloud-based sandbox is one thing, but an agent with read-write access to a local hard drive, that requires an entirely different security posture.
Right. But both of those still require a human to, you know, initiate the task.
Right.
Which brings us to tier two, which is workflow automation. And this is where the training wheels kind of come off.
Yeah, they really do.
This tier is defined by platforms like Zapier and NIN, which have now fully integrated AI agents into their automated pipelines. Now, Zapier is the one most people probably know. It's the standard entry point for connecting SaaS tools.
What?
Like if an email comes in, create a Slack message. Simple linear triggers.
Right. But NIN is where the mechanics get genuinely fascinating. NA is Zapier's much more technical sibling, and it earns its place in tier two because it utilizes something called branching logic, combined with human-in-the-loop architecture.
Okay, we need to define those because that sounds like some heavy engineering jargon. What does branching logic actually look like in practice for an operator trying to build a system today?
Think of branching logic like a highly complex dynamic flowchart that basically writes itself based on the context of the data it receives.
Okay.
Let's say you use NIN to automate customer service for a massive e-commerce company. A customer sends an email asking for a refund. Now, a basic automation just routes that email to a human queue, right?
Right, the old way.
But an NIN multi-agent pipeline reads the email using natural language processing. The logic branch evaluates it. Is the tone angry or calm? Is the customer high value or new? Is the product defective or did they just change their mind?
So it's making qualitative judgments.
Exactly. If the AI determines the customer is high value and angry, the branching logic diverts the ticket to an immediate priority escalation path. It might even draft a highly empathetic response and calculate a generous refund offer on the spot.
That's wild.
But this is where human in the loop becomes critical. It does not send that refund automatically. It pauses the pipeline, pings a human manager in Slack with a summary and the drafted response, and provides a simple approve or reject button.
Which completely solves the hallucination problem for enterprise deployment. You get the speed of AI analysis, but you still keep the compliance and safety of human authorization.
Yes, exactly.
So you aren't just connecting app A to app B. You are orchestrating an automated business process with built-in guardrails.
Right. And that distinction is vital. Tier two is about building reliable, repeatable infrastructure that just operates continuously in the background of your business.
Which tees up the absolute paradigm breaker.
Mm-hmm.
Tier three, the autonomous builder.
Yeah, this is the big one.
According to the breakdown, this tier is entirely occupied by one tool right now, and that's Claude Code. And the source explicitly notes that this fundamentally changes the user's relationship with software, like to the point where non-technical people are building functioning, production-ready apps without any human coding knowledge whatsoever.
Yeah, to understand why this is a tier three agent, we really have to look at how it breaks the traditional software development lifecycle.
Right. How does it usually work?
Normally, a human developer writes code, saves it, runs a compiler or a test suite, reads the error messages when it inevitably breaks, and then goes back to rewrite the code. It is a slow, iterative loop of trial, error, and debugging.
And what Claude Code does is close that loop entirely within the AI itself.
Yes. You don't ask it to write a specific Python function. You give it an overarching goal, say, build a secure login portal that connects to a Stripe database.
Mm-hmm.
Claude Code initiates an autonomous loop. It spins up a virtual environment. It writes the first draft of the code. It executes that code in the terminal. When the terminal throws an error because, say, a dependency is missing, the AI reads that error, theorizes a solution, writes a patch, and runs the code again.
That is insane.
It acts as the developer, the quality assurance tester, and the systems architect simultaneously.
Hold on, though. You're saying anyone can build an app now just by stating a goal. If that is genuinely true, why hasn't the bottom completely fallen out of the SaaS market yet?
Huh?
I mean, if the only mode a startup had was, we know how to build the software, and now an autonomous agent can just iterate through errors and build the software for free,
yeah.
What happens to the entire venture-backed software ecosystem?
The bottom is falling out. That is exactly what the TCI hedge fund dumping $8 billion of Microsoft stock signaled.
Oh, wow.
Right. The financial markets are already pricing in the collapse of the application layer mode. If your business model relies on charging a monthly subscription for a standard piece of workflow software, you are incredibly vulnerable right now.
Makes sense.
Why would an enterprise pay for a bloated SaaS suite when they can just deploy a Tier 3 agent to custom build a perfectly tailored, localized application over the weekend?
And we are seeing the adoption numbers skyrocket to back this up, too. Like, this isn't just theoretical futures. This is happening this quarter. Figma, the massive design software platform, is reporting earnings on Thursday, and their CFO, Praveer Melwani, just reported that an astonishing 75% of their paying customers are consuming AI credits every single week.
Which is a massive paradigm shift for a platform that's traditionally reliant on human manual pixel pushing.
Exactly. And look at traditional professional services too. KPMG, the consulting giant, just launched an internal dashboard to track how often its 10,000 U.S. advisory employees are using AI tools.
10,000 employees.
Yeah. But they didn't just build a passive tracker. They set an aggressive target. Employees are expected to use AI on 75% of their business days. They even built a leaderboard. They're literally gamifying the deployment of these tools.
Wow.
And simultaneously, OpenAI just pushed an update, making GPT 5.5. Instant, the default model for all users, driving latency down and explicitly promising a 52% reduction in false claims. The friction to adopt these tiers is just systematically evaporating.
What's really fascinating here is how quickly the definition of work is changing. I mean, the friction isn't just technical, it's cultural. When a big four accounting firm is mandating AI usage, it means the entire corporate infrastructure is realigning around these agents.
I think the best way to visualize this stratification is to think of it mechanically, like different types of engines. Tier 1 Manus or Cowork, that's a highly tuned electric motor. It's clean, it's efficient. You press a button and it does a specific complex job quickly. Tier 2, N8, and Zapier. That's an entire factory assembly line. It has conveyor belts, routing switches, and quality assurance checkpoints where a human inspector steps in. Right. But Tier 3, Claude Code, that is a self-replicating 3D printer. It builds the tools, tests the tools, and redesigns the tools without any external input.
That is a very precise way to look at it. But you know, that self-replicating 3D printer requires an immense amount of energy to operate.
Which is the perfect bridge, because frankly, if Quad Code is spinning up endless iterations of itself to test code, and if NAN is running branching logic on tens of thousands of customer service emails, the processing power required for that must be astronomically higher than a human typing on a keyboard.
Oh, absolutely.
Where on earth is the physical compute coming from to power all of this?
And this brings us to the second major development of the week. The brutal reality of physical infrastructure. We are entering what market analysts are calling peak AI infrastructure optimism. And the centerpiece of this moment is the impending IPO of Cerebras Systems.
Yeah. Cerebras is expected to go public on Thursday, and they are targeting a valuation between $26.6 billion and $35 billion, making it easily the biggest tech IPO of 2026 so far.
Easily.
But we need to explain why they are valued at $35 billion. Because they aren't building software, they are building physical silicon. How does a Cerebras chip differ from what NVIDIA is already doing?
To understand Cerebras, you really have to understand the fundamental physics problem limiting AI right now. It's called the von Neumann bottleneck.
Okay.
In a traditional computer architecture, including the powerful GPUs that NVIDIA makes, the processing cores and the memory are physically separated. When an AI model is processing massive amounts of data, like a Tier 3 agent, iterating through thousands of lines of code, it has to constantly shuttle data back and forth between the memory chips and the processing chips.
It's like having a team of brilliant chefs in a kitchen, but the pantry is like a mile down the road.
Okay.
They spend all their time and energy just running back and forth getting ingredients.
Exactly. That's a great analogy. The movement of data takes time, which creates latency, and it takes massive amounts of electricity, which creates heat and drives up energy costs. Cerebras looked at this and decided to break the traditional manufacturing paradigm entirely.
Not so.
Normally, silicon chips are cut out of a larger circular wafer. You might get hundreds of individual chips from one wafer. Cerebras decided not to cut the wafer at all.
They just use the entire pizza.
They use the entire pizza. They build what is called a wafer scale engine. It is a single massive chip the size of a dinner plate. By keeping everything on one continuous piece of silicon, they can put 40 gigabytes of memory directly next to the processing cores.
Wow.
The pantry is now inside the kitchen. The data doesn't have to travel across a motherboard. It moves microscopically within the single wafer. This radically reduces latency and power consumption for specific types of AI training and inference.
Which completely explains why they have such heavy hitters backing them. I mean, Sam Altman is deeply involved. They have a $10 billion long-term agreement with OpenAI, and they just struck a massive deal to supply these chips to Amazon Web Services, effectively supplementing Amazon's own in-house Trainium AI chips.
Right.
But an IPO valuation of $35 billion requires a massive leap of faith from Wall Street, especially considering Cerebras is burning through cash to scale their manufacturing.
Well, Wall Street is fully prepared to take that leap. If you look at the precedent set by a company called CoreWeave, you see why. CoreWeave is a specialized cloud infrastructure firm. They went public a year ago at $40 a share. Despite immense volatility and burning billions of dollars to build out physical data centers, their stock just closed on Friday at $114.
That's a massive jump.
The market is completely ignoring the cash burn because they are terrified of missing out on the AI infrastructure supercycle.
The demand is just so visceral. We saw Anthropic, the company behind Claude Code, scrambling for compute this week. They were revealed to be the unnamed customer behind a staggering $1.8 billion cloud deal with Akamai.
Yes.
That deal was so massive, it sent Akamai's stock soaring 27% in a single day. And if that wasn't enough, Anthropic also had to sign a separate deal with SpaceX just to deal with constant capacity shortfalls.
The SpaceX deal is particularly interesting. It likely isn't just about raw compute. It's about using Starlink's low-latency satellite network to route massive data sets globally without relying on terrestrial fiber networks that are increasingly congested.
Ah, that makes sense.
It really highlights how desperate these foundational model builders are for infrastructure at every single layer, processing, memory, and bandwidth.
But here's where it gets really interesting and where I kind of have to look at this IPO with some deep skepticism.
Okay, let's hear it.
The market for AI chips is not a blue ocean. It is insanely crowded, and it is dominated by apex predators. NVIDIA has an iron grip on the software ecosystem with their CDA platform. But beyond NVIDIA, you have AMD, Google, and Amazon all making massive strides with their own chips. Meta and Microsoft are pouring billions into proprietary silicon. Even OpenAI, the company that gave Cerebras a $10 billion contract, is actively working with Broadcom to design their own custom AI chips.
Which forces a critical evaluation of Cerebras' long-term independence. The consolidation in the chip market is already ruthless, and it's accelerating.
Yeah.
Look at the landscape over the last 6 months. Groq, which had incredible momentum with their language processing units, essentially threw in the towel on staying independent. They licensed their core technology to NVIDIA, and NVIDIA absorbed their top engineering talent.
Right, I remember that.
And Meta just aggressively poached a key group of engineers from another struggling chip startup called Graphcore. We are even seeing Apple reach preliminary agreements with Intel for manufacturing capacity.
So if the mega-cap tech giants are all building their infrastructure in-house, and the smaller agile startups are getting stripped for parts and talent by NVIDIA and Meta, is Cerebras actually a viable standalone business? Or is this $35 billion IPO simply pricing them to be a massive, unavoidable acquisition target?
Yeah.
Like, are they just fattening the calf for Microsoft or Amazon to buy them out in 2 years?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the probability of them remaining independent for a decade is incredibly low.
Really?
Yeah. The capital expenditures required to compete at the silicon fab level are just prohibitive. Cerebras has a brilliant architectural advantage with the wafer scale engine, but building the physical data centers to house them, powering them, and cooling them requires hundreds of billions of dollars.
It's unsustainable for a single new player.
Exactly. They are almost certainly an acquisition target post-IPO. For operators listening to this, the takeaway is stark. The infrastructure layer is going to bottleneck, and eventually it will consolidate into a monopoly or an oligopoly. You must design your software architecture, assuming that compute will be highly constrained and controlled by very few players.
Okay, so let's tie these threads together. You navigate the collapse of the application layer by aggressively deploying Tier 3 autonomous agents to build your software. You survive the brutal compute squeeze by securing massive capital and locking in infrastructure contracts with whoever wins the Silicon Wars.
Yeah.
You build something genuinely revolutionary, Your revenue is skyrocketing. You ring the bell at your own IPO. You've won the game, right? You've built the ultimate tech company.
Historically, no. In fact, if we look at the data, the moment you ring that IPO bell is exactly when you lose the company.
Which brings us to our third and perhaps most vital development. This is about surviving success. We've been looking at a fascinating breakdown from Lenny's newsletter detailing a new framework by Eric Ries, the legendary author of The Lean Startup.
Yes.
Ries has a new book out called Incorruptible, and he surfaces a statistic that is genuinely horrifying for any founder. According to his research, 80% of venture-backed founders are ousted from their own companies within 3 years of going public.
80%. That is not an anomaly. That is a systemic feature of the corporate architecture.
It's wild.
The company that receives the seed funding is rarely the company that files the S-1, and it is almost never the company that survives long-term with its founding vision intact.
Ries diagnoses this phenomenon using a concept he calls financial gravity. And the best way to understand financial gravity is to think about atmospheric pressure in space travel. When you are a small startup, say, a small capsule in low orbit, you don't really feel the pressure. You have a tight crew, a shared mission, and a strong culture. You can maneuver quickly.
But as you grow, as you take on massive venture capital and eventually transition into the public markets, you move into deep orbit. The mass of the capital surrounding you increases exponentially.
And just like physical mass creates gravity, capital mass creates financial gravity. The pressure to optimize for short-term, quarter-over-quarter shareholder returns begins to crush the hull of your company. Investors, a new board of directors, and even your own employees whose compensation is tied to stock options, they all inevitably shift their incentives.
Right.
They stop caring about the long-term mission that built the company and start demanding immediate yield.
And this is where Ries makes a profound pivot. He argues that most founders operate under the fatal assumption that their corporate culture will protect them. They think that because they have a great mission statement, inspiring all hands meetings, and a beautifully designed employee handbook, their company will resist that gravity.
Yeah, the classic ping pong table defense.
Exactly. But Incorruptible applies the same rigorous engineering mindset to corporate governance that the Lean Startup applied to product development. Culture is just a feeling. Governance is the structural hull of the ship.
And the reality of corporate law in a traditional C corporation is brutal. Once you take outside capital, your board of directors is legally bound by fiduciary duty. Their legal mandate is to maximize shareholder value. Period.
Yes.
If a founder wants to turn down a highly lucrative short-term contract because it violates the company's ethical mission, the board can literally be sued by shareholders for breaching that fiduciary duty. The founder gets ousted, the contract gets signed, and the company drifts into mediocrity or corruption.
But Ries points out that there is a structural fix. And what's wild is how simple it is. We are talking about a 2-page legal filing that most founders completely ignore until it is entirely too late.
We're talking about registering as a public benefit corporation, a PBC, or instituting very specific, legally binding charter provisions from day one.
A public benefit corporation fundamentally rewrites the legal DNA of the company. It legally expands the board's fiduciary duty. Instead of only maximizing shareholder value, a PBC board is legally mandated to balance financial returns with a specific public benefit outlined in their charter.
Which changes everything.
It does. It gives the founders a structural legal shield against financial gravity.
To see how critical this is, we don't have to look at history. We just have to look at what happened this exact week.
Mm-hmm.
Anthropic, the company building Claude Code, is the ultimate real-time case study for this entire framework.
Let's examine Anthropic's week from a financial perspective. Yeah. We already discussed how aggressively they are navigating the compute squeeze. They are doing the massive Akamai and SpaceX deals. To fund that, they're raising astronomical amounts of capital.
Yeah.
They just launched a $1.5 billion joint venture backed by heavyweights like Blackstone, Goldman Sachs, and Hellman and Friedman. And they have to do this because OpenAI is reportedly prepping a similar staggering $10 billion version of the same kind of joint venture. Anthropic is playing the highest stakes financial game on Earth right now.
So they are accumulating massive financial mass.
Mm-hmm.
They should be experiencing crushing financial gravity. And yet, look at what happened with the Pentagon this week. The Department of Defense just rolled out major AI deals to deploy foundational models inside classified military networks. 8 major tech companies signed on.
including Google, which signed a contract giving the DoD broad rights to use their Gemini models for national security operations.
Right.
And it is important to note the internal dynamics there. Google took this contract the very day after 600 of their own employees explicitly signed a petition asking CEO Sundar Pichai not to engage in military applications.
And just to be perfectly clear to everyone listening, we are not taking a political stance on whether tech companies should or should not engage in military defense contracts. We are simply analyzing the governance mechanics at play here. Google's management pushed forward despite massive cultural resistance from their engineers.
But the most illuminating detail of that massive Pentagon rollout was who wasn't there. Anthropic was noticeably absent from the list of 8 companies. They completely abstain from what is undoubtedly a multi-billion dollar revenue pipeline. Why? How can a company raising billions from Goldman Sachs legally say no to the Pentagon without their investors tearing the founders out of the C-suite?
Because Anthropic is legally structured as a public benefit corporation. Their founding charter specifically mandates a commitment to AI safety and highly controlled deployment. When the Pentagon contract came across the desk, their board of directors was not legally forced to optimize for the immediate revenue. The PBC structure acted exactly as Eric Ries describes it, provided the structural hull that allowed Anthropic to resist financial gravity and stay true to its specific mission parameter.
Wow.
If they were a standard C Corp, leaving that kind of money on the table would almost certainly trigger a shareholder revolt and a change in leadership. So what does this all mean? It means your culture will absolutely evaporate when billions of dollars are placed on the table. Ries points to the companies that actually survive long-term, multi-generational success with their missions intact. Costco maintains its relentless focus on consumer value and employee wages because it has structural choices backing its culture. Novo Nordisk is governed by an enterprise foundation that legally protects its mission.
Right.
Patagonia survived because Yvon Chouinard executed a massive structural ownership transfer to a purpose-driven trust.
And conversely, look at the governance failures when that structure is missing. Whole Foods suffered massive mission drift and cultural erosion after the Amazon acquisition. Andrew Mason was famously ousted from Groupon the moment growth slowed. Quibi burned $2 billion because its governance structure provided zero checks and balances on its leadership.
The pressure is just immense. We even saw Salesforce's chief communications officer, Carolyn Guss, step down. This week, the executive suite is a revolving door when the pressure to perform hits. And that pressure is only going to compound as the technology gets broader and weirder. I mean, speaking of the spectrum of AI we are dealing with right now, we even saw a hardware story this week that highlights how deeply this tech is penetrating daily life.
Oh, the robot pet.
Yes. The former CEO of Roomba just unveiled a product called Familiar. It is an AI-powered, soft, fur-covered robot pet. It physically follows you around your house, uses localized AI agents to learn your daily routines, responds to your emotions, and unlike a real dog, never needs to be walked.
It is a profound, almost surreal stratification of utility. On one end of the spectrum, we have Google deploying AI into classified military networks. In the middle, we have Claude Code autonomously rewriting enterprise software infrastructure. And on the other end, we have fur-covered robotic companions navigating our living rooms.
The blast radius of this technology is absolute. So let's bring this all the way down to the ground for you. You are building, you are operating, you are trying to lead a team through this chaos. Given everything we have unpacked today, here is a practical frame for your week. Here is exactly what you need to take action on.
Number one, audit your agent tiers immediately.
Yes. You have to stop treating AI as a monolith in your organization. Look at your workflows today. Are you paying massive SaaS subscription fees for tasks that a tier one assistant could execute? More importantly, are you structurally ready to unleash a tier three autonomous builder? Stop asking your team to use ChatGPT and start demanding they design branching logic in NaN.
Number two, watch your compute costs like a hawk.
With Figma reporting that 75% of their users are burning through AI credits every week, and giants like KPMG mandating 75% daily usage, enterprise compute bills are on the verge of exploding. The capacity shortages driving Anthropic to SpaceX are real. You need to budget for the premium, and you need to build software that is efficient enough to survive a compute bottleneck.
And number three, check your governance right now.
If you are building a venture that is even moderately successful, the clock on your financial gravity has already started ticking. Do not wait until you are drafting your IPO paperwork to realize you have completely lost control of your company's destiny. Pull up that two-page legal filing. look into transitioning to a public benefit corporation, or draft the specific charter provisions required to protect your mission. Build the structural hull before the pressure crushes you.
You know, as you run that audit on your tools and check your legal structures this week, I want to leave you with one final structural thought to mull over.
What's that?
We spent this entire deep dive looking at these developments in isolation, but what happens when they merge? Eric Ries warns us that financial gravity inevitably forces human beings to optimize for short-term financial returns, often abandoning ethics and mission in the process.
Yeah.
But what happens when you took a Tier 3 autonomous AI agent, an intelligence that can independently rewrite its own operating code, and you integrate it directly into a company's financial operations?
You give it the goal of optimizing quarterly returns.
Precisely. If a human board of directors struggles to resist the pressure of financial gravity, how fast will an autonomous agent descend into ruthless zero-sum optimization? If that AI has no built-in legal mandate, no public benefit corporation charter embedded in its code, and no human in the loop to feel the ethical weight of its decisions, what does financial gravity look like when it is executed at the speed of light by a machine?
That is a genuinely terrifying thought. We started this conversation talking about how murky the waters are in tech right now. Well, we're heading into an ocean where the AI isn't just navigating the currents, it is rewriting the laws of physics as it goes. We hope the frameworks we broke down today give you the clarity you need to build a resilient ship. Take these insights, audit your deployments, fortify your governance, and keep building. We will catch you on the next deep dive.